Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, February 20th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, let's get into it here. Tell me about the box office for this long, I guess, President's Day weekend. How did the big two movies that we were sort of anticipating, how did they perform? Bob Marley's One Love and then Madame Web.
Yeah, so not only did we have President's Day, both of those movies you're talking about opened midweek on Valentine's Day. So you kind of had like this 6-day stretch that the movies were kind of their initial window. So Bob Marley, One Love, topped the charts. It made $28.6 million over the weekend, but it did exceedingly well. It made $52 million over the first six-day stretch, which was much, much more than industry expectations. We were looking at maybe 40, you know, before. I think even that was optimistic, so it did really well. As far as its total global rollout, it also made nearly $29 million overseas, so it's at just about $81 million. I was a little nervous because the budget was revealed to be like $70 million, which I was kind of hoping it was closer to Rocket Man at like the $40 million range, but you know, it looks like it's going to do well. Critics were a bit soft on it, but it's got an A cinema score, so I mean, people are all about it as... our very own Hannah pointed out in her write-up over the weekend, it had the biggest opening day ever in Jamaica for a movie. So, you know, like there's signs that this is going to perform well outside of North America as well. So it did sort of give the box office a bit of a shot in the arm. However, this was still like the worst overall President's Day in almost 30 years. President's Day weekend. But there was reason to be optimistic. But anyway, yeah, so that was a good thing.
So swinging from the optimistic to the pessimistic, you got to tell me about Madame Web.
Oh, do I have to? It was pretty obvious heading into the weekend this wasn't going to be good. I wrote up last week after opening day, you know, Bob Marley, One Love set a record for Valentine's Day, like a midweek opening. Madame Web did not. Madame Web made $15.3 million over the weekend and just $26.2 million over that entire six-day stretch. It also made $25.7 million overseas, so it is at like a couple nickels shy of $52 million worldwide. There is a bit of contention over the budget on this one. The $80 million figure has been reported quite a bit, but a recent Hollywood Reporter write-up said it was closer to $100 million, if not a little more. Now, that's still on the cheaper side for a superhero movie, but this has a C-plus cinema score, which is very, very bad. Cinema score sort of tracks actual moviegoers, and sort of anything below a B is going to suggest bad word of mouth. So C-plus is really bad, especially for a superhero movie. It's got like a 13% critical approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which is quite a bit lower than even Morbius. So this is really bad. No indication this thing's going to stick around. I expect a gigantic drop next weekend. You know, one that it could really ill afford based on these numbers. So I don't know, maybe it gets to $100 million worldwide against $100 million budget. That math doesn't really work out. And much like Morbius, its only real shot at long-term life is sort of becoming like a campy cult classic of sorts. You know, which it could happen, but on the short term, it's pretty grim. So
yeah,
that's where we stand.
Yeah, it was interesting because that Hollywood Reporter article basically said like this movie performed so badly that Sony is going to have to scrap its spinoff plans. And I was not aware that Sony had officially announced any like actual spinoff plans to make a movie centering on like the Sydney Sweeney character or whatever. And I don't think they ever did. I think they were probably holding their cards a little close to the vest there and waiting to see how Madame Web did. But I think the results have basically just like put an arrow through the heart of whatever those plans might have been, right?
Yeah, they clearly didn't announce them, but like when you cast those people in those roles, the idea is that's always possible, right? We've been dealing with superhero movies for over 20 years. That's just how these things work. And then I think the idea was obviously you would maybe follow like a now in control of her powers, Cassandra Webb, and you know, yeah, then you could maybe do a Spider-Woman movie or whatever you were going to do. Like these things were on the table, but they are not now. So now it's just a matter of like how much loss do you mitigate? And more than that, I think the bigger question is like, why would Sony keep making these things? You know, Venom was the exception, not the rule. And Venom is one of Marvel's biggest characters, period. Even though he happens to be like a Spider-Man villain. Mm-hmm. You know, most of these characters that they're trying to spin these movies off, they haven't like headlined even solo comics and stuff. You know, Venom has had tons and tons of comics on his own. You know, so I think that like you just have to look at the evidence and like Venom was maybe the one character they could do that with. And they sort of somehow escaped bad reviews to become like a crowd pleaser. But, you know, something they're doing is not working. I'm not saying you can't turn characters that aren't necessarily popular yet into popular characters on their own. But what they're doing isn't working. And I think after Kraven, they've got to just stop this. Like, or you have to get a new team in place. Like these, you're damaging the brand more than anything else at this point, right? Like, because you have to put that Marvel logo in front of these movies. Like, it's not helping.
But I think Sony actually is in a position where they don't care if they damage the brand because there's so much brand confusion among, you know, normals out there, the regular people, regular moviegoers. They don't keep all this stuff in their minds about whether or not a certain movie is part of the Marvel Studios, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or whether it's Sony's weird spinoff thing. Like Sony probably doesn't care about that.
Well, I'm not saying they care about that broader, but like if the Marvel brand is tarnished overall, then if they have a Marvel movie coming out, it lowers it for them too.
Yeah.
You know, and it also sort of, they're also loosely trying to connect this all to Spider-Man. And I think that like, that's their cash cow. So you can't really risk even fractionally tarnishing that in other people's minds either. You know, so, and I'm not saying Spider-Man transcends that, I think, but I'm saying you got to be careful about what you're doing.
Yeah, no, I follow you there. I wonder if you think that so first of all, they're not just going to stop, right? Because they have this lucrative license to the Spider-Man stuff. And like, they have to make a Spider-Man movie once every, I want to say it's like 5.25 years or something like that. They have to release a Spider-Man or Spider-Man related movie. Sometime, you know, don't quote me on those numbers, but it's something like that in the contract, right? And so if they don't do that, then the entire Spider-Man character and the all of the adjacent characters, I think it's literally 900 plus characters that are encompassed in Sony's license to Spider-Man and Spider-Man related things, goes back to Marvel. And they're never going to do that because the Spider-Man movies, when they're operating at the top of their game, can be billion-dollar grossers and are huge, huge deals. So do you think Sony's move here should be to just stop with all of the spin-off stuff and just focus all of its resources on making Spider-Man movies that are like marquee and getting Tom Holland back and figuring out what the deal is with Spider-Man 4 or whatever they're going to end up calling it? Do you think that's the play on Sony's part now?
It has to be, at least for now, right? And you can lean into the animated stuff too, because that's doing well for them. But yeah, I think like, and I don't know. I mean, Tom Hardy's made it pretty clear that Venom 3 is it for him. So you can't even really, you know, keep doing that. But yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Like, Spider-Man, you know, like, I mean, I think like you could maybe make like, I mean, it's tricky because you can't even really do like a Joker movie with like Dr. Octopus because Doc Ock relies a little more on Spider-Man existing to actually work. And that's the thing, like Spider-Man is one of the best rogues galleries in comics, if not the best, but they all do rely on existing in that universe with Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like this great comic run called The Superior Foes of Spider-Man, which is sort of like a Sinister Six type thing, but it's like these villains that can't best him and they sort of team up and like you could do I could envision like a great miniseries or a movie on that. But again, it relies on existing in that universe with Spider-Man. And I think that like, clearly they don't want to overexpose Spider-Man by having him be in like 6 movies or casting 6 different Spider-Man. But you know, then that leads you to this problem. So yeah, I think they have to focus on the Tom Holland stuff, the animated stuff. I don't know how much longer Tom Holland's going to want to do it. So then what do you do after that? I don't know, but I think you just can't bite off more than you can chew, and they're going to end up not only losing money on these movies, but they're going to tarnish things. So yeah, I think that's what they have to do. One man's opinion, but
yeah, you know. I would think that this, the underperformance of Madame Web and the sort of like general drop off of this, plus the critical reception and audience reception to the animated movies, means that a live action Miles Morales movie might make a lot of sense. I know they've like hinted at that in some interviews and stuff. Amy Pascal is kind of like, you know, danced around that subject a little bit, but nobody's ever out and out said, hey, we have a live action Miles Morales movie in the works.
I guarantee you that's going to happen. Like that would be my guess after Tom Holland. Cause Tom Holland, I imagine after Secret Wars I already kind of think Tom Holland doesn't want to do it anymore. Like that's my feeling, but like, I also think he knows that he kind of has to. And so like, I think that like, that would absolutely be what they would do next.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they made that announcement or something. But yeah, because I could see it both ways with the Tom Holland thing. I could see him just never coming back because the ending of No Way Home, you know, just kind of leaves at a perfect time. And if you come back, then it seems like you're starting a whole new thing. And I don't know how much longer, like you said, Tom Holland wants to do this. I don't know how much he wants to like box himself into a whole nother thing. But anyway, we'll have to see how that all shakes out. But I was kind of shocked to read this headline on slashfilm.com, Ryan. A Russell Crowe movie you haven't heard of made the top 10 at the box office. And I'm like, wait a second, what is going on here? So tell me the story behind this.
Yeah, I don't know if you were genuinely surprised, but that was kind of my angle, right? Because it's like, no, like this is a real thing. So Oscar winner Russell Crowe is in a movie called Land of Bad. It is an action movie that also stars not one, but two Hemsworths. Both Luke Hemsworth and Liam Hemsworth are in this movie. And yeah, it's just a pretty simple like military action flick. I haven't seen it yet, but it does very much seem like my kind of thing. This only came on my radar at the very end of last week because I get Hollywood Reporter email updates and their review popped up in my inbox and the headline of the review, I was like, oh yes, that's for me, please. So this ended up making like $1.8 million in just over 1,100 theaters. So it actually had a pretty decent $1,600 per screen average, which is good. Like that's respectable. So whatever theaters were playing this actually benefited from it. And is $1.8 million going to change the narrative of the box office overall too much? Not really, but those theaters that had $1,600 worth of tickets sold and whatever and popcorn were certainly happy to do it. So yeah, I mean, it was just kind of a fun, weird little like, oh, okay, cool. Hey, this happened. And it kind of worked out because a lot of times you'll see these things drop in a bunch of theaters and, you know, it'll make like a few dollars and this one sort of worked out. So I don't know. It was kind of just like a weird, interesting thing to see. I saw no advertising for it and somehow it found its audience.
Yeah. That's gotta be just like an after effect of the complete dearth of other stuff in theaters. But like you said, you know, at least it's helping the box office, like, industry as a whole sort of churn along a little bit. So I can't be too mad at it. I've literally never.
Yeah, and the filmmaker seems super stoked because I don't even know if they expected, you know, that much. And like the director said something, like he found my article and found me on Twitter and said something very nice. He's like, thank you so much for the write. And he's kind of just like sharing details on the film. And I just don't think they were expecting. But yeah, so I don't know. It's just kind of a fun, like it's actually like a nice thing. Like, and good for Russell Crowe finding this like weird blue collar portion of his career where he's like taking movies like this or like The Pope's Exorcist or like Unhinged and like not looking down on them. Like he's doing the movies I have like this weird, like charming respect for what's going on with Russell Crowe's career right now. It's kind of nice to see.
Yeah, he's almost shifting into like Gerard Butler territory to a degree. Maybe not quite as extreme, but yeah, it's certainly a welcome change from some of the, I guess, more like forgettable stuff that he was doing, you know, in years past. So, I was just going to say, you have an article here about how Wonka has passed $600 million, which is kind of mind-boggling to think about. I don't really know if we need to get too much into the weeds on that. Like, people can read the article to get all the details. But did you have anything you wanted to say about that real quick before we moved on to the next thing?
Only thing I'll say is we've talked a lot about how younger movie stars aren't really as much of a thing. And so Timothy Chalamet very clearly asserting himself as a actual movie star here. And he's got Dune Part 2 hitting theaters in a little less than 2 weeks. And, you know, I think we're about to see him star in two back-to-back movies that make over $600 million worldwide. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's excellent. Okay, so another piece of news that came up last week is that Travis Knight, the director of Bumblebee, is the latest director attached to the Masters of the Universe movie, which seems to have been in development or development hell for... I mean, it just seems like one of those movies, Ryan, where, like, you know, if you've been in this industry for a long time and writing movie news like I have, there are movies like this and, like, The Crow reboot slash remake and... you know, just movies that kind of feel like they will never, ever get made because it's just been like a decade plus of different people attaching and detaching from making the movie or whatever. And there have just been so many different announcements about a live action He-Man movie, basically, that that I'm just kind of like, all right, I'll truly believe this when I see it. But Travis Knight, who directed Bumblebee and Kubo and the Two Strings, he's also the founder and CEO of Laika, the stop motion animation studio. He's also the son of Phil Knight, the co-founder of Nike, who was played by Ben Affleck in Air last year, is the latest director to be attached to this movie. So, I don't know. Do you have like thoughts on Travis Knight as a director and whether you think he might be the person to actually get this thing over the finish line?
I love Travis Knight as a director. Like, I will follow him where he goes. God, he was attached to something for a minute that had me excited. I forgot what it was. But anyway, but I think the main thing is that, like, yeah, this movie seems cursed. Like, I don't know what, I mean, Netflix sank millions into this thing and it didn't get made at Netflix, and I don't know, like, there's been like four actors that have come and gone. Mick G was gonna make this thing at one point. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me. I've never been a big Masters of the Universe guy or like a He-Man guy, but something about Travis Knight doing it feels interesting. Like, his sensibility, like Mick G doing it feels like, oh yeah, okay, that seems right in kind of the worst way. Whereas, like, this seems like, oh, okay, that kind of piques my interest. But I'm with you. I don't know. Travis Knight seems to find himself in these situations where he gets attached to things that don't happen, and I don't know. Yeah, but I mean, you know, to your point, that Crow movie for, what, 15 years? You know, they were, like, literally days away from filming with Jason Momoa, and then the plug got pulled. But hey, mm-hmm. That's coming out later this year. It's been filmed. Lionsgate got the rights. So, like, you know, who knows? Things do eventually happen. Maybe this is finally that time.
And he brought, I think Travis Knight brought a level of heart to Bumblebee that I appreciated. Certainly at that point in the Transformers franchise, you know, revitalizing that in a way. So if he can bring that same sort of, I don't know, like human touch, I guess, to a He-Man movie, then like maybe it'll actually be interesting instead of just crossing another piece of IP off of a list somewhere, you know? So
totally.
Yeah. Okay. So geez, so much news to get into here. So Sam Mendes, the director behind 1917 and the James Bond movie Skyfall and a bunch of other stuff, is directing, this just came out this morning, Ryan, this announcement. He's directing one movie about each individual Beatle, the members of the Beatles, the rock band, the Beatles. They are each getting their own movie, and there's not going to be like an Avengers level team up movie, but each one is going to receive their own film. And I believe these are coming out in 2027, and they have not announced yet exactly how they're going to be released, but they've said something like, you know, it's going to be like a groundbreaking release pattern or release style or something like that. So there's a lot of secrecy about exactly how they're going to roll these out. But it's clear that Sam Mendes is going to be making these for the next few years, certainly. So I'm just curious from your perspective. I think I want to say it's Sony that is releasing these. Yes, that's right. So from like a studio perspective, what do you think about committing to four movies, one for each individual Beatle? Like, do you think that that is, I guess, a smart business decision? And then we can talk about like the creative part of it.
If you can keep the budget for each one, call it $50 million a piece. So say you're all in for 200 mil, like, which would be your, you know, average gigantic blockbuster, your Avengers movie, say. If you look at how much money, like, Bohemian Rhapsody made, the Beatles are one of the only artists out there that could match that sort of, like, you know, sort of global take and global interest. I completely think this makes sense. Now, again, that's assuming that each one doesn't cost like 100 million.
So, yeah, I was just curious about like the creative part of it. Do you think that, you know, yes, the biopic has been a very sturdy genre. It seems audiences really, under the right circumstances, as we saw with the One Love movie that we just talked about, under the right circumstances and the right subject, audiences still flip out for this stuff, regardless of how boring it is to us, you know, people who watch movies all the time, the formulaic sort of tropes that we see over and over and over again. I could not be more bored at the idea of four more music biopics coming out. But what do you think about this? Do you think that there's something inherent to the Beatles and their mythology that like could make this more creatively interesting than some of the other biopics that we've seen in this genre?
Without question, but you got to do it right. And I think Sam Mendes is the guy, like, he's not going to shy away from, and I don't think the Beatles would either, right? Like, I don't think, like, you know, I think Paul and Ringo being the only two that are left alive, like, they would be the first to, like, allow this story to be told right, I would think. And the other thing is, I mean, the music rights are important, right? Like, you must have the right, because some of these biopics that are made slightly cheaper, like, don't have the rights to the actual music, so you're sort of focusing on the person. You can't do that here. You gotta have the music. But I'm assuming Sony has that. So I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think it could run the risk of being like kind of terrible, like if it goes poorly. But I also see creatively a way to make it's the Beatles. I don't know. I don't want to be the guy that's like, hey, have you heard of the Beatles? They're pretty great and their story's amazing. But like that's true. You know, like, so there's a reason every time a Beatles documentary comes up, even though you think you've seen and heard everything, you'll totally watch it. Like, so I don't know. I think this totally works. And I think if there's any band in history that could warrant like four movies because each of those guys is someone unto themselves, I think it's this. And yeah, I think Sam Mendes, like if I were to pick anybody to do it, he makes a ton of sense to me. So I'm curious. I'm interested. I see the commercialism behind it, which feels a little like, you know, you could accuse that of feeling icky, but like, I actually think the Beatles being so individualistic, you know, and not having like the Bohemian Rhapsody thing happen where it's like a Freddie Mercury movie with a side of the other members of Queen. Like I would hate to see that happen to like the Beatles. So,
yeah,
you know, I think it makes sense.
I've been on the record as being not really a big Beatles guy. So I am definitely in like sort of wait and see mode to see if this is something that I'm even going to go out and watch at all or like engage with in any way. But I certainly understand that I'm in the minority there and that this could definitely like have huge potential behind it. So we'll have to see how it turns out. Speaking of music biopics though, before we take a break, I wanted to mention one last story that came up last week, which is that Ridley Scott is making a music biopic. So not only do we have these four movies, there's another one in the works. This is going to be a Bee Gees biopic for Paramount. And Kenneth Branagh was reported to be directing this a couple of years ago. Steven Spielberg was rumored to be directing it way back in 2010. But now Scott, who actually has a personal connection with the Bee Gees, he, like back in the 70s, was going to be directing a movie that they were going to be in. And that project ended up falling apart. Evidently, he's been wanting to make something with them or about them ever since. And now that opportunity, I guess, has finally fallen into his lap because Paramount loves evidently what they saw from Gladiator 2, the footage that they've seen from that, which is coming out later this year. And they wanted to jump on Ridley Scott and get him signed up for his next directorial feature as quickly as possible. So they signed him to this Bee Gees movie. And it seems like the lure of the music biopic is so strong, Ryan, that even legendary filmmakers like Ridley Scott cannot escape the tractor beam pull of it. So what do you make of him stepping into this genre for the first time in his career?
Ridley Scott, I know we've talked about this in the podcast. Ridley Scott is one of my guys. Like he's one of my like Mount Rushmore guys. And Ridley Scott is, I think, 82. So I know he's only got a couple more in him. is my thing. And I'm like, if Ridley Scott was like even like 70, I'd be like, heck yeah, give me a Bee Gees biopic. Why not? But now, like, thinking that this could be his last, I'm like, it's harder for me because I'm not invested in the Bee Gees. So, like, I'm like, but I'll see anything he does. So I'm like, of course I'm into it on that level that it's Ridley Scott doing it. But it is interesting, you know, it's interesting that, like, he's got to know, right? He's got to know that, like, he's only got a couple more. And so I'm interested in the idea that he would be so interested in this, knowing that's probably the case. So I don't know. I'm of two minds about it, but
I feel like Ridley Scott's going to make like 15 more movies before he dies. I just feel like he moves so
quickly.
That's
my hope. That's my hope. I hope he's Clint Eastwood and I hope he just keeps going. But I will never forget. I was listening to a podcast with William Shatner, and this is even like 10 years ago, but he's like 92 now or something. But he was talking about what sucks when you get into like your 80s. He's like, anytime you feel a little weird, you go, is this it? Because you're just, you know, like, you, if you have any like sense about your own mortality, you know, it's like, you just know, like, there's no guarantees after a certain point. And I want Ridley Scott to live to be 150. I want him to outlive me, but you know, in the realm of reality, I'm not sure. So yeah. We'll see. I hope you're right. But it's just every time he signs on to something now, I'm like, what if this is, you know, it's like, I feel the same way with Michael Mann right now. I'm just like, please make Heat 2 before, you know, I don't know, but so we'll see. But I don't know. I'm anything Ridley Scott touches, even if it was something I felt like I was violently uninterested in, I would suddenly become interested because he's doing it.
All right. Strong words, Ryan. Okay. So we are going to talk about a bunch of Marvel stuff right after this break.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, so last week, the Fantastic Four cast had been finally confirmed, Ryan. Like, there have been tons of rumors about each person in this cast. I think Pedro Pascal had been officially announced, but there had been rumors that Vanessa Kirby was going to be playing Sue Storm / Sue Richards / The Invisible Woman. And who else? Joseph Quinn from Stranger Things season 4 was going to be playing Johnny Storm / the Human Torch, and the Bear star Eben Moss Backrack was going to be playing Ben Grimm / the Thing. And now Marvel has finally actually confirmed that, hey, yes, all of these things that have been floating around the internet for a long time, these are actually true. This movie is coming out in 2025. And not only this, but they sort of released this like Valentine's Day card almost online that has these characters in a 1960s setting, which seems to strongly hint that the movie is going to be a period piece that takes place in that time period. The logo of the movie also has that sort of classic 60s vibe to it as well. So what do you make of this, Ryan? Like, this has been whispered about for a while, but what do you think about the idea that this is now official?
I would just like to point out that it was we here at Slash Film who helped confirm that Pedro Pascal was going to be our Reed Richards. So, you know, just, but anyway, aside from that, I don't much care for the Fantastic Four. I've read a lot of comics in my day, and I like Reed Richards as like a side player in some of like the Avengers stories I've read, and like the Illuminati miniseries, which was one of my favorite things Marvel I've ever read. But I've never been able to like get into the Fantastic Four, like those comics as a group, divorced of everything else. That said, the 60s setting is fascinating and interesting, and that immediately makes it like different and stand out. And Matt Shakman, who is supposed to direct this, like, even though I didn't love WandaVision, what he was able to do with those period settings, like, indicates to me this is the right thing to do. That said, Peyton Reed is probably pretty upset. If for those of you who don't know, Peyton Reed pitched a 60-set Fantastic Four movie something like 15, 20 years ago. And it didn't go anywhere. And so, you know, Peyton Reed directing three Ant-Man movies and then watching Matt Shackman direct his Fantastic Four movie. But anyway, yeah, so I don't know. I like the cast. I mean, I think, like, I didn't watch Stranger Things, so I don't know much of Joseph Quinn. But Vanessa Kirby, similar to Ridley Scott at this point, is like, oh, she's in something great. I will totally watch it. You know, so I think that's a great choice for Sue Storm. And yeah, I think it's, I like the cast. I like the 60s setting. This movie has been bounced around a bit over the last 4 years. So, you know, presumably it seems like production's actually going to start here soon. We'll see. I don't know. I'm now interested because of the 60s setting and the cast, even though I'm not like a big Fantastic Four guy. So we'll see.
Yeah, I find myself very much in the same boat. Like, don't really, I didn't really read a bunch of Fantastic Four comics growing up or anything. And the movies obviously have not been great. Like, none of them, they've really not hit a Fantastic Four movie out of the park yet. So, which seems like such a, you know, from my perspective, seems like such a thing that they would want to devote all the resources that they could into making all of those movies as great as possible. But it just seems like that was not really what happened along the way for various reasons. The Josh Trank 2015 movie being like a huge famous or infamous disaster, which you can read all about the making of that on Slash Film. We covered that very much in depth as all of that was going down. But yeah, I'm like curious, and I like this cast, and the 60s setting certainly seems like, and this, frankly, this announcement of this and like the sort of Valentine's Day card and the sort of like fun presentation of this seems to have shown some like creative vision behind a Marvel thing, which is like sorely needed these days. And so I'm glad that that exists, even though, yes, I do feel sort of bad for Peyton Reed. And I'm very curious to know what he says about this eventually, because I feel like somebody's got to ask him something. And he's got to say something about it at some point. So anyway, speaking of projects that have sort of been bounced around a little bit, though, Thunderbolts, which is a movie we've talked about a lot on this podcast, has gotten a new release date, Ryan, and it's actually moving up on the calendar, which is kind of shocking. I think you reacted pretty strongly to that in our Slack channel when that news dropped. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so Thunderbolts is a project we've talked about quite a bit. I can show you the receipts in our Slack channel. It was like a little over two years ago when the movie first came to light. The day that news broke, I was the only one in our Slack. I was like, they're making a Thunderbolts movie? And everybody's like, what are you talking about? Because, like, you know, like, no, I guess nobody else really knew. And I was super excited about this prospect. And but this movie's kind of bounced around a lot. It's had you know, we've talked a lot about the casting stuff as of late, you know, Steven Yeun dropping out and other people trying to fill that role. Yeah, so, but yeah, it moved up to May 2nd, which was, because that July 25th date that it had been on next year is where Fantastic Four is going to come out. So it moved up a couple of months, but that also was a truncated schedule, because that means now, because it hasn't started filming yet, that means it's got to start filming like now, I think, pretty much, like if it's not already. We'll see. This is also supposed to be the end of Phase 5. Thunderbolts was originally announced as the final film of Phase 5. So I don't even know what that means anymore for the MCU, to be frank. Like, it used to feel like these phases ending, like, you know, were big events, and I don't know. But we'll see. I want this movie to be so good. I want to love this movie. I want to be excited about this movie. I'm so excited about Sentry coming to live action, but I don't know. It's tough. Cause like, even like, I don't like the version of Taskmaster we got in Black Widow, and that now is the version of Taskmaster we're stuck with. And so there's just things that, but we'll see. I mean, the fact that they were willing to move it up on the calendar says they must've finally gotten something right. So I don't know, but
yeah,
trying not to be negative about it, but I it is hard for me to feel overly optimistic about this one, given the entire picture of it.
Yeah, and given the state of superhero movies in general right now, and Marvel specifically, I mean, it just sort of feels like they're definitely in a creative rut right now. So, like, maybe that'll be the project that, that sort of helps get them out of it and get them back on track. I don't know. It feels like we've been saying that for a little while now, and it just hasn't really come to pass yet. So, yeah, I'm curious if, like, audiences truly are out on this stuff, even though Thunderbolts actually does have a pretty great cast still lined up. I mean, David Harbour and Florence Pugh and a bunch of other people are still, you know, likable actors are involved in this thing. So if it's like, if the movie tanks, it's not going to be because people don't like these actors. It's just going to be, I think, because they're sick of the larger superhero stuff in general, or maybe just like they don't buy into this concept or whatever it is. So we'll have to, yeah, put a pin in that and wait until this comes out. But the last thing I wanted to mention, Ryan, is that the trailer for X-Men 97 came out. And I grew up watching the 90s X-Men animated series. I was just wondering what your relationship was to that original show and if you're excited about X-Men 97.
My memory of it, and your memories when you're that young aren't perfect. My memory is that X-Men, the animated series, and Spider-Man, the animated series, were the things that kicked off my love of superheroes and comic books. And I think one of the things I didn't like when I got a little bit older, when comic books came back into vogue a little bit, is that like people were like snooty about like the comic books being like the sacred texts. And like, if you got into it some other way, it was like, eh. But like, to me, this was my gateway. Like, this was what got me there. Like, I loved Cyclops, and I had like this giant, like in my head, cause I'm like a 6 year old. Like, I had this gigantic Cyclops figure. It was probably like 6 inches tall or whatever, but like, mm-hmm. you know, and I loved it. And I had like these cool, like other X-Men toys, and I loved it. And this was like my, like, this is how I fell in love with Gambit. This is like, I don't know. Like, this is how I was first introduced to Days of Future Past, because they did like that 2-episode adaptation, one of the greatest comic book stories ever made. And just like, so I love this show. And like, the man, that trailer was awesome. Like, I'm just like, it was so good to see. Like, I'm sure like I and a bunch of other people did. I immediately started rewatching the 90s show, getting ready for this. Like, I've thrown it on in the background while I've been working and stuff. And it's just like, oh, this is like the first Marvel thing in a minute where I've been like really straight up hyped about it. And this trailer's great. And I don't know. I think it's really cool. And like, it's nice to get this excited. And it also feels like somewhat low stakes, right? Like, it doesn't feel super connected to everything else. Like, I can enjoy this on its own terms, which is pretty cool. So yeah. I don't know how you felt about it having watched the show growing up, but that's how I felt about it.
Yeah, I have not re-engaged with the animated series since I was a kid. But yeah, obviously, just like a flood of nostalgia and memories of watching that show and you know, watching this trailer. I was very impressed with the look that they were able to achieve, which is like very similar, but definitely like updated. And it just looks like they have the characterizations right. And I think a lot of people are going to be like fully on board with this. Comes out March 20th, so a month from today. I just have to say, Ryan, like I, as much as I was like impressed by this, I just know myself, and I know that it's going to be years before I watch this thing. Like, I want to be in that scenario where I'm like as excited to watch it that I like sit down with the rest of the world, or, you know, the rest of the fans and like consume this all, you know, as it is released or whatever. But like, I'm still a season behind on Harley Quinn, which is a show that I've loved for years. And I just like haven't found the time to watch that. So I just know that, like, you know, practically speaking, there's no way that I'm going to watch this anytime soon. So that's where I am with it. But I hope that it's as good as this trailer indicates. And I hope that like people who grew up watching the show end up loving this. And it seems like, you know, certainly a piece of connective tissue that is actually like warranted and could be creatively interesting, as opposed to just like, hey, here's a Lego sequel for something that, you know, people have kind of forgotten about or doesn't really strike the public consciousness in the same way. This definitely seems to have scratched an itch for a lot of people, at least from the response that I saw to it online, of people being like, exactly like you said, you know, who had this show as a gateway and now have like the continuing adventures, which is a rare thing. It's not like, hey, here's this show 20 years later or whatever. It seems to be picking up right when, you know, when the original left off. That's like the whole premise behind it. So just a very cool thing that they're doing. And I'm glad that people have like invested resources into this, and I'm glad that the storytelling seems to be on point. So I hope it ends up as good as it can be. But I don't know if you have any other thoughts about that before we wrap up for the day.
No, I think we've droned on enough today, Ben. I think we can let the people go.
All right. Well, that sounds good. We'll be back tomorrow. You can find more about all these stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. We'll link to a bunch of them in the show notes. I encourage people to read those as always. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe to our newsletter, send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.